Hello, Lois. What branch of service did you serve?
I served in the American Red Cross.
How long?
Approximately 2 years.
Where was that?
That was in the Mediterranean Theater Operation.
What influenced you to volunteer?
I think it was probably a friend of mine who suggested I volunteer.
What did you do prior to enlistment?
I worked for the Home Service Department of a utility company, putting on cooking schools and demonstrations and things of that sort.
Oh, what did you do in the service?
I worked in rest camps and in officer and enlisted men clubs.
Did you expect this experience to prepare you for a career?
No, not necessarily.
Did it?
Not really.
What was your pay?
I think that's irrelevant right at the present time.
Were you given equal opportunities for service and education?
Well, in the Red Cross, I don't think that applied to people that were from that branch.
Oh, what assignments were given to women?
In the Red Cross, you mean?
Yes,
Well, I think there were recreation directors, club mobile people, hospital service. I believe that was it at that time. And then probably in the offices, like secretaries and things of that sort.
What was the nature of your housing?
I was billeted in the hotels or in the actual clubs where I worked.
And medical care?
I didn't have to have any medical care, except one time I thought that I had hepatitis and they gave me a shot in the fanny with a big dose of penicillin. I think the needle was a mile long.
Who's they?
The military.
Oh, so then you didn't have to have other medical care. The Army. What was your uniform dress?
It was a gray uniform. And then later on it became OD. It became sort of kachibach.
What was your memorable experience?
Oh, I had many of them. Probably the most unusual experience I had was had nothing to do with Red Cross, had nothing to do with my ability to be a home service worker, had absolutely nothing to do with what I was doing over there, except I was probably a little too nosy. Yeah, I was in the fall of 1945, and I was on a special assignment with three other girls in the northern part of Italy. By the northern part, I mean it was somewhere between Leghorn and Rome and Naples. And we were on a particular assignment of giving troops coffee and pastries when they came down on the train from northern Italy on their way to Naples, and then from there they would go home by troop ship. And we took different shifts during the day, and my shift happened to be a night shift. And what we would do, we would get the coffee and pastries ready for the fellas, and then when the train whistled in, why, they would get off the train and exercise a bit and have the pastry and coffee, get back on the train and go back to, and then continue on their ride down to Naples. This was in the late at night, and the Italian man came running into our club and talked to one of our Italian helpers, and he was saying something about my Italian helper said Croce Rossa, and he looked at me, and he said Signora Bambino and Signora Malata, and I recognized Red Cross. A sick signora, something about a baby. So I had the interpreter talk to me, and it seemed that this man who came rushing into the club was traveling with his wife, and she wasn't feeling well. She was pregnant and was going to have a baby. And he had taken her out of the car and put her into this boxcar in the switchyard, and had come for assistance. So I had one of my Italian people take him into town to get a doctor. So there was an MP on duty, and I knew quite well, and so I said, well, let's go over and take a look and see how this woman is doing, what's, you know, how she's getting along, or if there's anything I can help her with. And so I had just opened a bag of sugar with a, and I had the sugar sack in my pocket, and I thought, well, I'll get some towels and candle and matches, and we'll go over and sort of make her more comfortable. And they had pointed out to me what boxcar she was in, and there was sort of a ramp going up to this boxcar, and we walked over there, and it was pitch dark, and he had a flashlight. When we set up the candles and lit the candles, and and then I saw she wasn't going to have a baby, she was having it. So I never was very interested in any in babies or little animals or seeing anything get born, and probably if it was now instead of 40 years ago, I'd have been a little more aware of what was going on. At that time, I knew nothing. But I'll tell you one thing, from what happened between when they, you see in the movies, the doctor asking the father to heat hot water, and the next thing you see a squall, I found out what happened in between. I delivered the baby. I had never in my life seen anything being born. I took the mucus out of its mouth and tried to clean out its nose, turned it upside down, got it to squalling, and handed it to the mother. I did know I had to do something about that cord, though. And so I can remember when I was a Girl Scout that I tied a square knot, and I thought that's the best thing to do. So I asked the fella that was there with me to burn his blade on his knife on the candle, and I remembered I had the cord from the sugar sack in my pocket, and I cut that cord and tied it in two places and cut it in the middle, wrapped, cleaned up the baby a bit, and handed it to the mother. Just about that time, the doctor came. And then I could hear the train whistling in, so I hurried back, put an apron over my bloody dress, served donuts and coffee to the oncoming troops. And after it was all over with, I got sick. I was sick for 3 days. That was one unusual experience.
Indeed, it was. Wow, is that the only one, or can you think of another one?
Oh, I've got all kinds of
experiences. Tell us another one.
Oh, I don't know, I'm not very good at telling stories. I have all kinds of stories to tell. I had one real unusual experience that I called my Dujave friend. And this happened to be that I would see that I saw the same person about six different times in course of a year and a half. And although I was with people who I thought knew that that I had talked with this man, nobody would ever admit that I ever saw this person. The only way I could ever remember who he was or even distinguish him was by his piercing blue eyes. I think that anyone who was overseas with the service, things happened so fast and you saw so many different people, that just by chance to meet someone six different times was in itself unusual. And as I think back, I wonder right now, did I ever know that meet this person, or was it just a dream? But it happened three incidents in Bari, one in the southern part of Italy, one time in Pisa, and one time in Interlaken, Switzerland. I think he was probably with the CIA, the OSS, or what, but he had been in different types of uniforms, such as the Navy, the Air Corps, dressed like a Swiss, dressed like a native Italian, dressed like a Yugoslav, and never once could I find anyone to admit that they had seen him. I'm sure he had some highly secret assignment, and although he told me that he'd see me after the war, I think he must have been killed, because the last time I saw him was in Interlaken, Switzerland in the fall of 45. That was a most unusual experience, because if any of you can remember, you very seldom, by chance, ran across the same person. Did you ever have occasion to see the same person more than once? It seemed like there were so many people coming and going in the area, and especially the kind of work I was in, I saw lots of people Never did I see the same person twice, especially in rest camps. And, oh, in club work, they would come into the club, but you would never see anyone in Rome that you hadn't planned on meeting him. You'd never see anyone in Pisa or in Florence or just by chance on the street. And that's the way 6 different times I saw this man. I call him my Dujave.
That was unusual.
Very unusual. Yeah. I would like to know.
But you talked to him.
Yes, every time. I spent time with him. He had piercing blue eyes, and that was the only way that I could ever distinguish him from someone else. Because, as I said, he was dressed in native costume at times, and a couple times when I saw him on the street, I spoke to him. His name was John, and I got a real lot of flack from the fellas, because they said, what business do you have talking to local people? And that's only thing about him that it was ever distinguishable, and I often wondered whatever happened to that man. He told me one time that he was a college professor in foreign languages. That's all I've ever known about him, but I've often wondered whatever became of him. I think he must have been killed. Otherwise, I'm sure that I would have heard from him after the war, because he took my name and address. I know nothing about what his full name was, who he was, what he was. He did have my name.
That is interesting.
It is unusual.
Yes, yes. No, I didn't have... I was attached to an outfit, so we just saw the same people all the time. Can you compare service careers then with the present?
I have no way of comparing them. In recent times, don't know anyone in the military nor in Red Cross, so I have no way of comparing them with then or now. I know that I was treated very nice. As you know, the uniform. Once you had a uniform on, you were immediately compared with everyone else. I mean, if you had a uniform, that meant that you were no better or different than any of the rest of them, and one person could ruin it for a whole group of people.
Did you experience conflict between being feminine and being a military professional?
No.
No. Did you use benefits of the GI Bill?
No, of course, in Red Cross, we couldn't.
We weren't even given any, that's right. What demanded the greatest adjustment? Uniform dress, living with others, regulations, lack of freedom, terminology? What was the greatest adjustment?
There was no adjustment. You know, I went into the Red Cross, not because, well, maybe we'll want to talk about that later. The reason I went into the Red Cross was not from a patriotic reason, nor that I wanted to get away from something. I always liked to travel, and the way I figured, if I went overseas, I was traveling on someone else's money to see the world. I don't know whether you ever read any books by Richard Halberton, but I enjoyed reading his books on travel when I was a youngster, and I thought, ever I give a chance to travel, that's what I'm going to do. So going with the Red Cross overseas meant I was going to be able to travel. I didn't know whether I'd go to Europe, South Pacific, Timbuktu, or where. But the fact that I was over there and it was indeed a job made it much easier for me than I think it did for the military. It seemed like the fact that they were someplace they didn't want to be, it was a hellhole. It didn't make any difference whether it was the most beautiful spot in the world. The fact they had to be there was one thing. To have to do something is one thing. To want to do it is another. I wanted to do what I was doing, and I enjoyed every minute of it.
What was the most unpopular regulation?
I can't remember about anything unpopular, any kind of unpopular regulation. As far as the Red Cross was concerned, I think we probably were freer in what we were able to do than the military was. I can't think of anything that was very unpopular, except that when I first arrived in Naples, there were 100 Red Cross girls on the ship, and we were obliged to be at a dance. And 100 females with thousands of men, we no more danced with them 1 second than we were pushed somewhere else, and it seemed just like we were cattle. Do you remember that, June?
No, isn't that funny? I don't remember.
Must have made a big impression on me.
Huh. Anyway. I don't remember that. But I remember that we were freer because we could mix with the enlisted men and the
officers,
where if
enlisted
you were one or
couldn't.
The other, you couldn't.
Yes,
no.
I think. And I think that the enlisted men took a dim view of the fact that we could mix with both of them, that we probably, in some instances, preferred officers to enlisted men or enlisted men to officers. There might have been that problem. However, I was always with officers at one place. I was with enlisted men in a rest camp, but there was no problem there.
What did you do after your service was concluded?
Well, I came to California and I got a job working. I've worked ever since. I lived for about 20-some years in Hawaii, and I've been back in California about a year and a half or 2 years.
Hmm. Were you civilian or military? You were considered military.
In the Red Cross?
Yes.
Well, only I think that if we were captured, I think we had the rank of a captain. Is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. How was your service organized?
I beg your pardon, I don't quite understand.
Well, I'm just thinking of ours. We had two girls that were in Club Mobile that gave out the donuts, and then we had a man that was the head that sort of received all the mail. And
I had I probably was unique in the assignment I had. I went from Naples, where I landed, to Bari, Italy, and from there I was assigned to the 15th Air Forces. I no longer had anything to do with the Red Cross, but was directly responsible to the military. And I went to a rest camp, and there was another Red Cross girl there, and she and I ran the recreation activities to the rest camp. Usually one or the other was gone some of the time, but we ran that, and then we went from the mountains of Calabria down to the ocean, to the Adriatic, about as far south as you could go, to a place called Santa Cesarea Terme, and we traveled just like a, moved down there like a traveling road show. We had men come to our rest camps for a week at a time, and during that week we planned all the entertainment, and then the next week another group was coming, and we'd start all over again doing the same thing.
What kind of entertainment, for example?
Oh, we had bingo games,
uh-huh.
We had dances, we had bonfires. Every night we had something planned. And then, do you remember, June, when we went overseas, there was that horse racing game where they shot dice in your horse.
Uh-huh.
Well, I set up a horse racing game, and we had lots of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Bonfires. I can remember the flight surgeon who fancied he was quite a cook, shooting a sauce into the wieners for our hot dogs, and some of the men thought he was putting saltpeter in the wieners, and as a result, they wouldn't eat any of them.
Did you stay in after the war?
No, I didn't.
Mm-hmm. What did you dislike about your work?
I can't think of anything I really disliked, except that for so much of the time I was alone. The other person that was with me was up in the mountains of Calabria. Really should never have been in the Red Cross, and she traveled around a lot. And I felt like I was all alone quite a bit of the time. All the time I was in rest camps, I felt like I had no one to turn to. That was what I disliked most about the rest camps.
What did you like most about your work?
Well, the travel. I was very fortunate to be with rest camps because I did get to meet a lot of people. And my immediate boss was Don the Beachcomber. I'm sure you've heard of the Beachcomber clubs in Hawaii. And He was a colonel, you know, lieutenant colonel in the 15th Air Forces, and he knew lots of interesting people, so I got to meet a lot of people, Andrew Costalance and his wife, any kind of entertainment that was over there. The Barretts Wimpelstreet was over there with Brian Ahern and Catherine Cornell. I met lots and lots of people I never would have ever hoped to meet living in a little town in South Dakota.
Mm-hmm. Were you ever under shell fire?
No, only what happened to us that first night in Naples, first or second night, were we under shell fire?
Well,
at least there was an air raid.
Yeah, well, they had air raids because they were taking pictures, I think, because we were going into southern France and military was in the ocean, you know, we had all these
I know the that they routed us out of bed and we went down into a tunnel, and when I looked down at my shoes, I had them on the wrong feet. So I just don't think I'd have been very good under shell fire.
Did you have any after effects from your war service?
No, except that I believe I did have a touch of hepatitis, which has kept me from ever donating blood. I really don't know whether it was actually hepatitis, but there was a bad epidemic of it that came over from North Africa.
Is there anything else you would like to add?
No, except I thoroughly enjoyed my service, my time with the Red Cross. I had a lot of fun, and all in all, I thought it was a good experience.
Thank you.